Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. This is Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Friday, October 27th, 2023. Thank you so much for tuning into the Eastman Financial Report and for watching our programming on WVW-TV. We really appreciate your viewership, and of course, as you know, WVW-TV has been around quite a long time, since I think 2006. And we are not a commercial television network. We don't sell commercial advertising, and we are not beholden to those who buy advertising on our site. We simply don't do that. We are a sponsored network, and we also survive from generous gifts and donations from viewers such as yourself. So if you've contributed make a contribution, and that basically keeps us on the air 24/7 at no charge. There's no paywall. There's no annual subscription to worry about. Just quality programming at the touch of a button, and we appreciate that. And we appreciate all of you for not only watching but helping support this effort as well. We also have sponsors, of course. The sponsor for my program is Swiss America Trading, which is a precious metals dealer in the United States out of Arizona, and they've been in the space for a very long time. And of course, they provide, they create a market for tangible precious metals. So if you're thinking about adding some gold or silver or platinum to your personal holdings in an effort to try and diversify in these inflationary times, 71. Tell them Dan Eastman sent you, and they'll be happy to send you some free information about how the tangible precious metals market works. You can also go to their website, SwissAmerica.com, and you can shop around on their site and see what they have to offer. If you use the promo code Eastman, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, you will be able to get some free, the same free information, and you will also be able to buy a special program right now that they have. If you call them or go on website, you can pick up some silver coins, silver bullion coins. These are standing half dollar silver coins, and Swiss America is offering them right now at $13.50 a piece, and that includes shipping to your home or business or your office, which is a great deal, because if you look at the price of silver, at $13.50, that's with shipping included, that's a bargain, and you may want to think about that, not only to purchase silver for your own holdings and portfolio, but also they make great gifts for the holidays. If you're thinking about what to buy old Uncle Joe or your niece or nephew, certainly giving them something of great tangible value, like a silver coin for $13.50, or maybe get two, that's a real deal. So you might want to think about that, not only for your own personal investments, but also as a gift. It gets young people started and thinking about precious metals and the history of precious metals since the very beginning of time. If you go back to scripture, you look at Genesis, I think it's chapter 2, and it's in the second chapter of Genesis, you talk about a place where the gold is good. And of course, gold and silver have been part of human monetary conceptualization since the creation. I mean, people have been thinking about gold way to store value. And it works because if you do some labor and you can capture that in a token of gold or silver, that gold or silver is precious to others, and that's what allows for the transfer of value in coinage. So giving somebody some silver coins or gold coins or platinum coins certainly is a really good idea to get people thinking about what is probably very, very early money. I won't say it's the earliest. There are probably stones or seashells or something, but at the end of the day, getting people thinking about how we store value is an important thing, especially in this digital age. So if you're interested in that type of investment at all, or that gift-giving opportunity, give Swiss America a call, 1-800-519-6271, or go to their website, SwissAmerica.com, and shop around and see what they have to offer. And they're happy to send you free information that explains the market, Don't ever buy anything without understanding what you're doing. But certainly, if you're looking for a very strong and competent partner in the tangible precious metal space, Swiss America, they've been around a long time, great reputation, and they'll do you well. So give them a call, 1-800-519-6271, or go to the website, swissamerica.com, and use the promo code Eastman. Okay, let's move on to the news today. I want to talk about a couple of things. There's news, of course. We have the unemployment news. Let's talk about that first. The unemployment rates, we watch that from time to time. Every Thursday that comes out, it was yesterday. And it's an interesting situation because the claims for unemployment, of course, have gone up. And this tends to be in the 200,000, 210 range. And over the, and it's done weekly on a Thursday basis. So it kind of tells you it's been holding steady around 200,000 people each week are applying for claims for the first time in this cycle. You know, so if you become unemployed and you don't have another job to land in, you need some help with your groceries, then you apply for unemployment, which is a state program to basically buy some necessities. But it's certainly no path to panacea or the easy life. And many states actually have work requirements or requirements. Like in Wisconsin, you have to submit evidence that you've applied at two places every week and do other things, and then they'll give you a very small check because the idea is not to fund you, it's to get, you know, maybe you can buy some groceries until you can find a job. And that, of course, shifts the burden to the job seeker. Times, you know, it's relatively easy to find the next job. But when times get a little tough and unemployment rates are going up, then that gets a little bit harder, and that program becomes a little bit more critical to a lot of people. But anyway, while the first-time claim, the people that are staying on unemployment has increased, I think 1.79 million people across the country. Now, unemployment programs are finite. You don't go on unemployment and spend the rest of your life living on small amounts. They run out. I mean, because the idea is to bridge you until you can find gainful employment or find some other, if you're disabled or something, then they would find some other path. But this gives you that little bit of a bump to help you out. And that's why we notice that unemployment claims going up is never a good thing, but it does suggest a continuing softening in the American economy that we're watching. Now, the next story I want to talk about is the University of Michigan. As we talked about the past week, time, and they're very good at it, and this has got a long track record. And what they do is they contact mere mortals like us, you know, normal human beings, and they sense of the economy. What is your sense of inflation? What and these are not experts. They're not polling the experts. It's the sort of the person on the street type thing where they're going out into the community and where it's going. And of course, the number that caught my eye is that amongst we the people, the normal people, the expectation has, let's use the word surged, okay? Well, it went up. It went up to 4.2% is the expectation of what inflation is going to be. Point 8% inflation, and now it's bumped up to 4.2. So what it tells you, and of course the economists and PhD mathematicians come up with formulas to calculate inflation, and they're sort of wild guesses, or maybe not wild guesses, but they're not exactly accurate to the 10th decimal point. I mean, these are a guess, all right? So when you sample or you poll the average person on the street, you can expect a less sophisticated calculation, but probably a more accurate perception. And that's the beauty of the University of Michigan consumer sentiment surveys, is that they're capturing what the folks on the street are thinking about. And of course, people are saying, you know, boy, they're shopping and they're buying gasoline and they're buying clothes and they're buying stuff. And they say, you know, 4.2% on average. You know, somebody's going to say five and somebody's going to say four and somebody will say eight, you know, and they average it all out. But what it tells you is that the person on the street worse, not better. Now, when you go into a political crazy year like our every 4 years, this has political ramifications at a number of levels, because with the consumer thinking that inflation is going up and it's that expectation, then as prices go up, consumers don't rebel as much as say, it's almost like a passive grant of acceptance that inflation is going up. And the Federal Reserve notices that. And keep in mind, we are at the end of October, and next month we'll be blessed again with the Federal Open Market Committee meeting in Washington, having great lunches and having heated discussions as to the effect on the economy. And I'm sure they'll also be noting that no matter what interest rate they're tweaking over here, the markets are already doing the tweaking for them, and the market price interest rates are higher than where the Fed is thinking. So the question is, does the Fed raise the rate to capture the market, or does the Fed lower the rate and try to calm the economy, or at least give more comfort to those who are trying to buy homes and other things? And this is all going to be worked out next month. So the point is, when the Fed sees this number that the people on the street are thinking inflation's going up, that gives them an incentive to further tweak the interest rates up. Will slow the economy, pull the punch bowl away as the party's getting started. And at the end of the day, that is information that they're going to take in. So it's an important number. And I think that's, that's kind of an interesting point. As part of that survey, they also do consumer sentiment. And that's like, well, how do you feel as a consumer? I mean, are you going to spend a lot of money, or are you going to pull in your horns, or what are you doing? And consumer sentiment is down 6%, and personal financial situation. How's your personal financial situation? Down 8%. So when they sample these people, and these people are painting a picture, what they're telling you is that person on the street is thinking that their personal financial situation is deteriorating, and that their consumer sentiment is that, that it's deteriorating. I'm not going to buy as much. It's going to be kind of a slim holiday season. Do I really need this or that? And also that inflation is going to be going up. So what it paints a picture of is that the consumer or the person on the street has sort of a bleak outlook on the economy at the moment. And of course, they do this monthly, so who knows, maybe next month everybody will be happy again. But the reality is, at this point in time, as we're heading into November of 2023, and of course, campaigns are starting, and there's going to be lots of excitement on the political scene next year, we're not going into an election year with a robust economy. And that has... that usually is not favorable to the parties or the politicians in power. People think, my personal financial situation is down 8%, whatever that means. Consumer sentiment is down 6%. It's going to have 4% inflation next year. Maybe it's time for a change. We'll vote out one person, vote in the next person. And that's not a good thing if you're the incumbent. And of course, it's a real blessing if you're not the incumbent, because you can play on these consumer sentiments. And of course, consumers here in America have the right to vote. And that translates. Of course, this is not a political show. It's an economic show. But the point I'm making is, when you're going into 2024 and the person on the street's view of the economy is down, that's not helpful. So we'll watch and see how that plays out. There is one silver lining, though, of course. If you are a government worker, this is good news. Your wages year over year are up 7.8%. Now, can you imagine that? You're up 8%. Your wages went up. Now, this is not everybody, but on average, government workers' wages went up 8% when everybody else's wages are struggling along and the poor United Auto Workers are out there striking Chrysler. Raise, but yeah, you work for the government, you get 8%. So I guess that's comforting to know for the people on the street. Obviously, they weren't the ones surveyed by the University of Michigan, because if your wages are going up 8% heading into an election year, boy, you're going to be happy. So good for the government workers. That's wonderful. There's also another indicator out today, and that's the savings rate. And we, you know, people who calculate such things look at how much of your personal income are you able to set aside in savings every month to save for either a rainy day or some personal situation that would require you to dip into savings. And we know from our illustrious Vice President of the United States, who savings. Yeah, that's a bleak number. I mean, $400, you know, that's not even a medical bill in this day and age. But the important thing about this particular number is that the savings rate has declined from 4% of your personal disposable personal income to 3.4%. That's almost like a 20-some percent. And when you look at this individual disposable personal savings number going down, at the same time credit card debt is going up, what it's telling you is that the consumer is really struggling. And they're looking at higher food prices, of course, and, you know, gasoline prices are all over the board. I'm looking at my local $69 a couple of weeks ago. The oil and gas market is a difficult market to predict. And of course, with the situation in the Middle East, it's very unpredictable. And there's some political stuff as well. If you look at oil companies, their profits tend to do very, very well in times like this. And that puts political pressure on. Use and balances. And I talked about this at length yesterday, this 29% average credit card interest rate. People are saving less, spending what they're earning, credit cards, and it's because the inflation rate is higher than normal. And you can see that in people's expectations. You know, they're looking at 4.2%. This is the unsophisticated calculation of the person on the street, which many times is very much accurate, much more accurate than PhD economists. But at the end of the day, what it's telling you is that there's a real squeeze on in the American economy. And when you couple that with the bad news, the bad international news of not only this continuing sinkhole of money in Ukraine, now we have, of course, the situation in the Middle East that's not only playing havoc with the oil markets, but has the potential to become a very, very large conflict. People are on edge. And this is, I think the American mind right now is trying to think about how do I survive this, not only the economic situation with higher inflation and, this challenge with respect to keeping my job. We looked a couple of the stickiness number of jobs. And people in good times will change jobs in a drop of a hat, as they'd say. But when times get tough and the economy slows down, well, you kind of hang on to your job because you don't want to be in that zone where you're unemployed, filing your first-time claim, and finding out you don't have the necessary funds to pay your bills, which are relentless. I mean, car payments are very high if you look at the price of cars, and car is quite high, and in addition to if you've had to purchase a home with an 8% mortgage recently, and of course our student loans are kicking in. So this is not a good time to be in the American consumer slash taxpayer, and that's why it's so fascinating to watch from a fiscal perspective, an economic perspective, this is the gyrations in Washington, where every time a flame emerges, and I'm not making light of any flames that emerge. I mean, this is some pretty serious stuff that's going on in the Middle East. It's disastrous, but when things like that emerge, the question is, for how much longer can the United States of America be the ultimate solution and money pot to solve every problem in the world? And the answer is embedded in the $33 trillion in debt, soon to be $35 trillion. We're spending right now, we're spending at a deficit rate, and I think I mentioned that yesterday, in 1 month there was $600 billion in new debt. Well, that's 0.6 trillion. And it's a lot of money. It's just a lot of money. So the question becomes, how much longer can we afford to continue to do this? And it's not just taxing the people and spending their money overseas. because the money we're bringing in is barely enough to cover our domestic operations. If you take Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and the Defense Department, which is a big four, I mean, our collected taxes are just about, well, covering that. And the rest of the stuff, we're pushing a $2 trillion deficit in one year. That's not a sustainable situation. So when we start to think about what that does psychologically to the average, basically trying to earn a living and not only stay alive but prosper, we find ourselves in a situation where there's we're just it's out of balance. Now we have a new Speaker of the House, of course, and it seems like this person is taking the job seriously, which is good. How do you stop on a dime and unwind $33 trillion in debt and bring yourself to a balanced budget when you promised everybody in America something, whether it's Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, this, that, not only that, but a robust national defense, which is our military. And then at the same time, we're running around just pumping hundreds of billions of dollars into, the checkbook's open. So there comes a day of fiscal reckoning. And unfortunately, these things have happened in the past. This isn't the first time. If you read history, and it's probably a good idea to do such a thing. You go back to the Assyrians and the ancient Greeks and the Roman Empire, and then all of the different empires that have come and gone, including the British Empire. And what you'll find out is I think that's a big part of why we think about this from the economic perspective. It was a lot simpler back in the day, the post-war day, when America was a very strong and powerful country, which we still are. There was economics back in those days. The debt was looked at as a bad thing because of the debt blowouts of the 1920s and the collapse of the stock market and the financial markets in October of 1929. The resulting Great Depression and then the World War that manifested itself. When people are depressed for a long time, they get a little angry, and then all of a sudden, World War II breaks out. It took a long time to recover. It took a generation and a half to do that. But then economic policy was very stabilized because we were the only game on earth. Today, it's a much different globe. We talked yesterday about how American dollars flow to China to buy stuff for the big boxes, and then the stuff comes here, it gets consumed, it ends up in the landfill, and the money's in China. And what are the Chinese doing with the dollar? Those dollars. Well, we know that they converted $21 billion into gold and continue to grow their gold. At the same time, the United States continues to pump out more and more and more dollars in debt. So we're at an interesting crossroads. And I think, from the perspective of the individual, you say, well, what can I do about it? It's all happening around me. It is. And I think that you certainly have the ability to call your elected representative concerns about financial instability hurts the entire economy. And hopefully they'll listen and do something. Paying attention to financial news is important, and also learning and understanding financial concepts. And this isn't about going into the stock market and putting money in and gambling to see if it goes up. And structure your personal financial platform that will give you the most amount of security that you can have. And I think one interesting way to do that, and this is again, I'm not a financial planner or analyst, but what occurs is that you may want to take, a clean sheet of paper, and you may want to start out with like a pyramid type thing, and you want to start taking a look at your assets, which is means stuff you own. Okay, now there's assets, and then there's liabilities, which is money you owe, and quite often assets are pledged as collateral for liability. If you think of a car, you go out and you buy a car, okay? You go to the dealership, money happens, you get the deed or the title of the car, you drive off with the car, there's a loan, and the bank has a lien on the asset. So you bought an asset, but there's a lien on it. And the difference between the loan and the value of the asset is spread, that's your equity. And like the old saying, you buy a brand new car, you drive it off the parking lot, and you lose some percentage of the value. It's not a real good, cars are not a good investment unless you're a car collector. And then that's becoming a very interesting world. I'm marveling at the prices that some people will pay for an old used car. It's all fixed up. But the point is, you may want to take a really good analysis of what are your assets. And if you're, you want to just, how much cash do I have in the, on the couch cushions or in the, the armrest of my car? Start out with cash, and then maybe you want to take a look, because that's liquid. Cash is liquid. And then, maybe you do buy some of those $13.50 silver coins. Okay, I'm going to have some cash, and I'm going to have a little bit of metal. Just, tangible precious metal. And then I'm going to have a house, and there's going to be a mortgage, and then hopefully you're not underwater. There's some equity. Okay, now I have house equity. And then maybe you have a 401k at your business, at your employer, and you put some money in an IRA account. Then you have that layer, and you build this Viennese tort, these layers of what you have, so that you can start to see your tangible wealth. And maybe some of these are intangibles. I have a CD at a bank, or somebody left me, $300 when they died, and I put it into a CD. The point is, you build up this list of your assets, so you kind of have an idea of what you own. Okay, and that's the beauty of our system, our legal system, our economic system, is that you have the right to own personal property. Okay, so this is your pile. You can't take it with you, but while you're here, at least you've got a pile. And you start thinking about that pile of your assets. Then you take a look at your debt on the other side. And this is where it gets depressing, because you'll have a mortgage on your house, and you'll have a car loan, unless your car is paid off. And if your car is paid off, it's probably not worth much, because they are depreciable assets. And then maybe you have student debt, and you get credit cards, and you don't want the debt pile higher than the asset pile, okay? But unfortunately, in America, if our vice president is correct, there's a $400 spread between the two. That's not a good place to be. So when we live in a world of economic uncertainty, what you want to be doing is focusing on what you have, and not gamble and speculate, but to start looking at this as a thing of value. And then on the debt side, you want to start paying that stuff down as fast as you can. Now, debt is a tricky thing. We know credit cards are at 29%. That's going to take a long time to pay that off. Mortgages can be paid off. If you send the bank an extra $100 a month, and there's people on the internet that explain how this all works. But if you consistently prepay your mortgage, you're going to pay less interest over time, as you're paying it faster than the amortization table would suggest. And that's to your benefit. You're growing your equity, okay? And that's why those types of things are important to do as individuals. And let's start thinking about managing this like you would a flock of sheep, rather than, just a bunch of random receipts in a shoebox. Anyway, I want to shift on to one more issue that was important today. There's a big story about Convoy Trucking going broke or going out of business. And I want to talk about the trucking industry. I have 2 minutes. And I think I'll come back to this again next week. But the trucking industry is critical to the American economy, more so today. History has a very, very, very long history. I mean, people with wooden carts were pushing stuff around. If you make something over here, and somebody over there wants it and they buy it, somebody's got to go haul it across the surface of the earth. And in order to do that, you need a cart, cartage. That's where that word comes from. And of course, trucks are the modern day version of all this stuff. Has come over on the boat from China. It gets to the port, they load it on a railroad, and that can haul it somewhere. And then from that somewhere, there's distribution, and that's where the trucking industry becomes a really, really big component. And we're seeing some significant economic struggles in the trucking industry. And now this convoy trucking went down. And of course, we had talked about the yellow truck situation a couple of months back. And what's happening in the trucking industry is some real turbulence and turmoil, not necessarily unrelated to the idea that consumers are buying less, because we talked about this. We've got, you know, consumer sentiment, and people are spending less money. And when there's less stuff to haul, you know, less stuff purchased, there's less stuff to haul. But I want to talk about the trucking industry, I think, on Monday, and dive into this industry, because it's critically important to the American economic infrastructure, and it's under some very severe economic pressure right now. And we think about trucking back in the glory days of the 1930s up until the Reagan administration in the 80s. It was a regulated industry, and then we deregulated it, and now the challenge has come. Well, I'm out of time for today. We'll pick up on trucking next week. Have a great weekend. Thank you so much for watching the Eastman Financial Report and WVW-TV. Really appreciate your support and your viewership, and have a great weekend. Bye.